I don't think I've ever met anyone who said, I have anxiety and I'm perfectly fine with it. If that's you, well, just fast forward about 15 seconds and this short ad will be over. If, however, you're one of those people that says, I wish I didn't have anxiety, then head over to quietbegins.com and check out the program that I created called the Safe Empowerment System. Ever since COVID started, I have kept the system at 50% off the full price, and I never looked back. Get the Safe System at this indefinitely discounted rate over at quietbegins.com today.
Life presents the toughest challenges. Every day, you are faced with decisions that test your ability to express who you really want to be in this world. We're told to keep saying affirmations and keep thinking positively, but what do you do when that stuff doesn't work? Welcome to the Overwhelmed Brain, where you'll learn to make decisions that are right for you so that you can create the life you want now.
Hello and welcome to the show. This is the personal growth show for the critical thinker. I don't know if you remember me ever saying that in previous episodes, if you've heard this show before, but I have called this the personal growth show for the critical thinker for quite a while because I want you to be able to think about things and think through things in a way that helps you solve the problem. And so if you are here because you want to increase your emotional intelligence and avoid dysfunction and handle toxic situations with grace and ease, this is the place to be. This is where you can show up as your truly authentic self. What does that mean? It means that deep down inside you, there's probably something else that you wanted to say that one time you faced that one situation that you think back and think, I should have said something different. I should have told them what was on my mind. I should have told them how I really felt. One of the things that I've done over the years and I've shared on this program is how I've experimented and taken risks. And there's a point that I reached in life where I just decided to start taking risks because I was kind of getting sick of the results that I was getting. I was getting outcomes that I didn't appreciate, that I didn't want, and I was sick of getting those outcomes. And I finally just told myself that if I'm going to get the outcomes that I don't want anyway, I might as well just start being honest. So that's what I started doing. I started being more honest, telling people how I really felt about things, and also taking risks in the form of knowing that I could lose the relationship, lose the job, lose the family connection, lose love, lose support, lose a bunch of stuff. I took risks in the face of loss, which actually improved my life tenfold. I mean, I can't imagine what my life would be like had I not started being more honest and more transparent with people. I mean, I don't suggest you be transparent with everyone, but sometimes you are thinking about something and you want to say something, but you don't. You bite your tongue. And when you do that, what you wanted to say or do never happens. And that worries me when I do this in my own life. When there's something that I want to say or want to do and I don't do it or say it, I ask myself, well, where does that desire go then? Does it just fade away? Does it disappear? Or does it get stuffed down into a negative emotional pool or well inside of me to build up and become some sort of destructive force later in my life? I don't think I think about it that deeply in the moment, but in general, philosophically, this is how I think. I think if I don't do or say what's truly on my mind, be my authentic self, then what happens to that need or the wants or the desires that I have? Do they fade away or do they get repressed inside of me somewhere? And if you've heard me talk about this before, I worry about suppressing thoughts and repressing emotions because that can lead to depression. And I don't want to be depressed ever again. If you've ever experienced depression and you've gotten past it, you probably feel the same way. if you're still dealing with depression, or it comes and goes, or you're working through it, or you need medication, you probably have said something to yourself, I wish it would go away. When you're past it, when you heal from it, then you have an opportunity to make sure it never comes back. I mean, you always have an opportunity to make sure it never comes back, even if you're going through waves of it. But I was sick of being depressed. I was sick of a lot of things in my life. The results I was getting in my life, I did not want anymore. My relationships were failing. I got burnt out at my jobs. I usually quit in 4 years, every single job I've ever had. My friendships got burnt out. I just felt like I was losing all these aspects of my life, or never gaining any traction in my life, in all these areas of life. And one day I just decided that every outcome I'm getting, it's the result of everything I do and say. Instead of accepting that I am a victim to what happens to me, I've chosen to be responsible for what happens to me. And I've chosen to see the domino effect of every single choice in my life that led to the next choice, that led to the next event, that led to the next person saying something or doing something to me, to the point where I could trace back every single negative consequence or result that I got in life back to a behavior or a decision that I made. When I started doing that, my life improved. This is taking responsibility. You take responsibility for everything that happens in your life, even when you are a full victim of what happens in life. That doesn't mean you can't be victimized. That doesn't mean you can't be a victim of something that happened to you and you had absolutely no control over it. That's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is you can probably trace back to a moment in time where you made a choice that created an outcome that you didn't like or hated or severely suffered from. This doesn't make it your fault. It just helps you take responsibility for all your choices in life. And I'm not saying you're responsible for someone else making you suffer. That's not it either. The only thing you're responsible for is taking responsibility for your choices. And I know this is personal growth 101, this is Buddhism 101, this is cause and effect 101, these are the basics, and you've probably heard people say this before. You need to take responsibility. Don't be a victim to the world. I totally get it. But I'm sharing this with you because I actually applied it. I actually told myself that I am responsible for that person leaving me. I am responsible for getting fired that day. I am responsible for not having enough resources in my office when they weren't giving me enough resources, even though I could probably blame them for it. I'm responsible for that person betraying me. I'm responsible for that person lying to me. I'm responsible for the accident that happened when they crashed into me. How can you take responsibility for that? How is that possible? Because sometimes you don't know it's coming. Well, I can take responsibility for getting in my car that day. What this does is gives you power. It empowers you to know that you do have choices, and maybe choices that you didn't consider, and gives you a sense of perhaps you could have controlled some of the circumstances that happened on that day. Not all of them. Maybe something was inevitable. Maybe no matter what you did, if you stayed 1 second longer at that stop sign and didn't move, then that person wouldn't have T-boned you. If you had only stayed a second longer. Even that is taking responsibility. I could have stayed a second longer. I could have looked both ways twice. That's taking responsibility. Doesn't make it your fault because the other guy blew through a stop sign. But you're still taking responsibility for what happened up to that point. So my point about everything I'm saying here is I started applying that responsibility, meaning I'm going to take responsibility for the results that I get, which means, and I think this is the key to all this, when you take responsibility for the results that you get, you realize that if you want better results, you have to make better decisions. And those decisions may not be obvious at first, but if I were to break something down using like the car accident example, if I were to break that down and say, you know, there's this bar that goes up my windshield that I can't see past, and it creates this blind spot. And this blind spot was right in my line of sight that I did not see this guy coming at 60 miles per hour, and if I had seen him, I might not have gotten to an accident that day. And somebody might say, it was still his fault. Yeah, I totally agree. And you're still the victim. Yeah, I totally agree. But I might not have gotten into an accident that day. That doesn't point the blame. That just says that might not have happened. And now that I've learned this, I can buy a vehicle that doesn't have that bar or has a different windshield or has a different point of view so that I don't get into trouble like that again. Doesn't mean I won't get into trouble another way, but this one little thing, this one little change I make compounds if I make other changes in my life too. So when I make other little decisions, little changes, and start applying those little changes, I might start noticing that my life changes and improves. At the same time, I'm open to the idea that my changes actually make it worse. It is possible that it could make it worse, but here's the difference between making it worse and making it better, and what I've learned is that when you take responsibility for your part in something, your role, what you end up learning is just how much control over some circumstances that you do have in life, and just how much power you have to change your circumstances. And an example of that is the work situation that I described. For example, I worked for this company and I needed an assistant. I was just overworked and there was just so much coming my way. But I was one of those people that didn't speak up, and I just thought that if they saw that I was way too busy, that they would eventually help me out. But they saw me just keeping up and being stressed about it, but never complaining about it. So I just kept working, and they just kept appreciating that they didn't have to hire anyone else because I never said I need anyone else. And so what ended up happening is I got burnt out on the job, and that burnout made me leave. And they were surprised. They thought, what? Why are you leaving? What can we do to keep you here? And I said, there's nothing you can do. I'm totally burnt out. I'm done. I don't even think I said I was burnt out. I just said, you know, I'm done. But I remember the exit interview, that's exactly what they asked. They said, what can we do to keep you here? And I thought to myself, wait a minute, I've been here, 4 years, this is my burnout point. I've been here for 4 years. And the question that you just asked tells me that I could have asked for help the whole time I was here. Because if they were willing to keep me on board because they liked my performance and they liked me, then they probably would have been willing to help me out because they wanted me to stick around. And if they thought that I needed help and they knew I was honest, and when I say I needed help, they believed me, they probably would have gotten me help or changed some procedure or something. But that whole time, I never asked. So I spent 4 years blaming them for not giving me the resources and the personnel that I needed to fulfill my duties, to, you know, not be stressed and to keep up with all my work. I blamed them. I felt it was their fault. And then they asked me this in the exit interview, what can we do to keep you? What do you need from us? I thought, whoa, this is mind-blowing because I never thought I had a choice. And this is often the victim side of the equation. If you identify yourself as only the victim and having no responsibility or no choice in the matter, then you lose your power and you lose your ability to make things better, if not before, then next time. And again, I'm not diminishing or invalidating the people that are truly victims in the world. There are some really awful, heinous stuff that goes on in the world, and I wish it never happened. But because it does, some people get stuck being that victim, and they get stuck in the messy web of what it is to be a victim, thinking that they have no control and no choice. And it is quite possible while they were being victimized, they were out of control. Absolutely. But what do you have control over? What can you change? And what can go different next time is a better point of focus. I'm not saying that you could have avoided everything. I'm not saying that being the victim was your fault in any way, because believe me, I can point the finger just as easy as anyone else. I can point the finger at someone and say, you did that to me, and it is your fault, and I have no problem saying that. And then I can point the finger at myself and ask, what can I take responsibility for so that it doesn't happen to me again, and I am more empowered next time, and I can change the situation so I am less likely to be a victim next time. And I think the compound effect of you making little changes, at least in your perception of what you can take responsibility for, this is what helps to empower you so that you don't look back and say to yourself, oh, I could have done something differently. Why didn't I do that? I didn't even know that was an option, and it could have been an option this whole time if I'd only done that or I'd only thought about that before. And, you know, we have to learn this stuff the first time. This is exactly what I'm talking about. The first time where I was burnt out on that job and decided to quit, and they asked me, what do you need? What can we do to keep you here? I know that if I had known then what I know now, I could absolutely ask for some resources or a change in procedure to help me do the job right without the stress that I had so that I didn't get burnt out. And what that entails is what I started talking about, which is taking risks by being authentic. Because if I were truly authentic during that time when I was employed at that company, I would have gone to my boss and said, look, this is stressful. I can't handle it. You need to give me some reprieve here. You need to help me out. Let's figure this out together because I can't do my job effectively. See, a long time ago, I did not stand up for myself. I did not speak up for what I wanted because I believed I would get fired. I believed they would see me as a complaining employee and just say, well, we don't want people to complain. We just want people to do their job. So we don't need you. We'll find somebody else to take all this stress. And absolutely, that could absolutely and does happen. That does happen. But what I decided was that it was more important to stand up for who I am, take responsibility for my results, and take risks for the results that I wanted. This is all funneling into this one point. When you take risks for the results that you want, two things will happen. You may actually get the result that you want, and you end up not repressing or stuffing down what you really think and feel. And I guess there's a third thing. A third thing that happens is more like a butterfly effect, is that the more you show up authentically and say what you want at the risk of losing something that might be important to you, because it's your truth, because you're being honest, because you want to be in integrity, and because you're taking responsibility for your results, the butterfly effect is when it creates a ripple across all the areas of your life. And the reason this happens is something that I learned through experimentation. Every time I took what felt like a risk, or what I might consider a leap of faith, where I shared something that I knew, or at least believed, would cause a loss in my life, whether a romantic relationship or a job or a friend or a family member, whenever I took that risk that where I told somebody how I really felt, or I shared something that I knew might be heartbreaking to somebody or tough for them to hear, the more I did that, the more my relationships improved and the more my life improved overall, because where I did it in one area, that area spread into other areas of my life. When I did it with one friend, that friend became more trusting of my word and their trust in me spread to other people that learned to not necessarily trust in me, but make them feel better about me, or my friend would talk well about me and that would spread amongst them. And then at my work, if I said something that I needed or I told a boss how I really felt, like, hey, look, I don't want you yelling at me in front of all these people. It's very disrespectful. If I said something like that to them, they're either going to say, well, that's too bad, you're fired, or they're going to say, oh, I'm sorry about that, I didn't mean to do that. And they're going to know that I'm a straight shooter, that I'm going to be direct with them. And after I've tested things like this, I never said those exact words, but I've said similar things over the years at different companies, I've always been more respected and even gotten promotions and raises because I decided to take the chance. And doing that at work had that butterfly ripple effect throughout the organization. Even my coworkers ended up having a little bit more respect for me and saw me as someone that could actually stand up and say something to my bosses, and they found that an admirable trait. And that's a trait often found in leadership. So I'm not trying to pat myself on the back or anything like that. I'm just saying I took these risks, and these risks ended up fulfilling my needs and my wants and giving me the outcomes that I wanted but never knew how to get there, all because I decided to be a bit more transparent, a bit more vulnerable, and a lot more risky. And yes, it can go the wrong way. I took a risk with a family member. I told this person the truth. I said, you know, I don't want to make our relationship about money, and I would rather, you know, continue what we have because I love you and I want to have a great relationship that has nothing to do with money. And this person didn't like it. I don't think they felt very good about it, and I haven't talked to them ever since, and I don't think they want to talk to me. So I do hope to talk to that person someday again, but I was honest. I was in integrity. I told this person how I really felt, and I said it in a nice way. I said it in a kind way, but the type of relationship I wanted didn't line up with the type of relationship they wanted, and that's okay. You know, this is what happens sometimes. But 99% of the time when I've taken risks, I've always gotten something better than I expected. And this is what I mean by experimenting. I took risks in the sense that what I would normally do or say would be the safe way, but instead of being safe, I was honest. And when I went the honest way, I expected the worst and got something so much better. Better relationships, stronger bonds, more respect, and just overall, a more fulfilling life. So I can't tell you to do any of this. I just can't say, you know, go out there and be honest and then suddenly you're fired and you're homeless. But I will say that if you spend your life repressing what you want to do and say and how you feel, then what ends up happening is you stuff a lot down. And when you stuff it down, it never leaves your system. It feels like unfinished business, like you never have closure. You might end up creating some emotional triggers and you lash out at certain people for certain things because you never told them what you really wanted to say or never did what you really wanted to do because you felt held back in some capacity. So when that happens and you choose not to take any risks in life, and all I mean by risk is when you speak your truth at the risk of loss or the risk of being broken up with or getting fired, because it's your truth, because this is how you really feel, then what's going to happen will happen outside of your control. And this is where I tie it all in. This is where, when you take responsibility for your life in the way that I'm talking about, by speaking up for yourself, being in integrity, saying what you need to people that you believe may not like it, you end up taking responsibility for your results. Because if you don't say anything, then you don't have the responsibility for your results, which means you lose your power, or at least a lot of it. You're no longer empowered because you didn't speak up. And a quick disclaimer for all of this is it doesn't mean that you should say every single thing that comes to mind. It doesn't mean when you're angry and you want to call that person a bad word that you should. It doesn't mean that you should do that. It doesn't mean any of that. It just means sometimes there are things that you want to do or say that you wouldn't normally do or say because you don't want to make waves. Like that day I told a relative that I didn't want to make our relationship about money. I didn't want to say it, but at the same time, I knew if I didn't say it that the relationship would continue the way it was, which gives me no power. I wanted power. I didn't want to feel like I always had to avoid this person. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to make the relationship about that. So I wanted to let the person know that this is how I wanted the relationship to be. And can we agree to that? And they did not. They did not agree to that. So I don't know if that relationship will eventually be repaired, but I was honest and I felt like I needed to say that so it didn't hang around or linger inside of me. And that's a big one too. Sometimes this stuff just lingers. Oh, I wish I could tell my drunk stepdad to go away, but I know that'll tick him off and get him angry, so I won't do it. That used to be me, and now it's not. But there are times where I will pick my battles and not tell certain people my truth because I know they're too volatile, or maybe there is a relationship I want to salvage there, but I'll just have to know it's going to be limited or restricted in certain ways. And that's fine too. You just have to come to an acceptance of how that relationship is going to play out so that you don't expect anything more from them. Because as soon as you expect too much or more from someone who hasn't given more and doesn't plan on giving more, you will be disappointed over and over again. They will never, ever meet your expectations, and you will always be upset. That's why sometimes it's good to accept the relationship the way it is if it never has changed and they really don't plan on changing. So sometimes you have to accept it. And I think I'll end on that note. I hope this has been an interesting segment for you. It's certainly interesting to me, and I wanted to share with you what might be helpful for you as well. So thanks for listening. And when we come back, I'm going to read you an email about true love. That's all I'm going to say about it. When we come back, I'll read that to you and we'll see where we go with it. Be right back after this. You've probably heard me say this before, but this podcast is sponsored by an organization that I am actually proud to endorse. It's BetterHelp Online Therapy. I mean, life is full of stress. It's full of things that make us stressed. And it's also full of a lot of people that want to help. There's a lot of people that want to help. I want to help. I want to make you feel better. I want to give you tools to help you feel better. And if you've been listening to this show for as long as it's been on, and you're still not getting the exact steps you need to get into a better space inside your own head, inside your own heart, inside your own body, so you feel comfortable in your own skin, BetterHelp is one of those great services that I'm so glad is available. You know, I used to do one-on-one coaching, and now I can offer this service to you, which is going to give you the variety of expertise that I can't offer. I mean, I can offer a lot on this show. I've offered a lot to my clients over the years. But what BetterHelp does is match you with the perfect person that can help you with your needs. And how they do that is you just sign up and they give you an assessment. Then they assign you a licensed counselor, a licensed therapist. And then within 48 hours, you're talking to someone that can help you out. They do phone, they do video chat, and they do online chatting and anything that you need, anything that works for you. And this works for a lot of people. I've already heard some great stories from people who've used BetterHelp, and I'd love to hear more. I want you to unload the stressors and get some unbiased feedback on what's going on in your life. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist. You're going to appreciate how much more affordable it is than in-person therapy. And as a listener of this show, you'll get 10% off your first month if you go to betterhelp.com/brain. The word better, BETTER, and the word help, HELP.com/brain. Get that 10% off. When you have things that you can't tell anyone or you feel like you can't unload to family and friends, this is where BetterHelp steps in. Check them out, betterhelp.com/brain. Get 10% off your first month today so you can start living a happier life. Welcome back. Let's just find out if this email that I received has more love in it or abuse. Or maybe it's something I haven't talked about yet. Let's see where this goes. This person wrote, "Hey, Paul, I have a question for you that I'm having a hard time trying to answer. I truly believe that love never dies. If we truly love someone, even for a split second, we establish a connection forever, even when the person leaves. I met someone years ago that I felt I had a very strong connection with. The relationship was short-lived, but started off so lovely. The connection was something I've never felt before, and this person was very respectful, kind, and caring. Unfortunately, that companionship ended with this individual revealing to me a different side of themselves, one that was rude, selfish, and degrading to me. Years later, I tend to miss this person, but I do recognize that the way they treated me in the end was not loving at all. I want to recognize the love that was once there and cherish it in my heart, but I also would like to acknowledge that this is not someone who would have made a good romantic partner. Is it foolish for me to want both? And is it even possible to feel and think both? I get that these two ideas contradict each other. On one hand, I want to feel the love for someone, and on the other hand, I want to recognize the devious nature of this person. How should I train my mind to handle this situation differently? Thank you so much for sharing that. That is a really good topic to talk about because I think love, at least for me and a lot of people I've talked to, has changed over the years from childhood into adulthood. So when you're a kid, you have crushes. Maybe you have an infatuation, but that usually happens when you're a little older. Then you grow into your teen years, and then you think you're in love. You just love this person so much, and you can't live without them, and there's nobody that will ever, ever show up as wonderful as that person. Then when you grow out of your teen years, you think, what was I thinking? Sometimes we have these people that come in our lives and we're just so in love and so connected and so emotionally attached to them. And then we get into our 20s and our 30s. And I believe love shifts throughout the years. And how I've perceived love over the years is how they make me feel about myself. So when you are in love or really care about someone and they make you feel good about yourself, you feel loved. When they support your happiness and what makes you happy, you feel loved. You feel supported. You feel cared for. And when you feel that way, you want more of it and you want more of them. So I look at love as not only how you feel about someone else, of course, but also how they make you feel about yourself. This is why I define emotional abuse as making someone else feel bad about themselves. It's like the opposite of love. Love is supporting the other person's happiness or what makes them happy and supporting their individuality and supporting them being themselves. I think that when somebody does that for you, that defines love, at least for me, closer than anything I can put words to. Otherwise, it's just feelings and having an emotional connection to someone, loving being around them, and sharing yourself at the deepest level with someone who you hope is doing the same with you. So I'm just making that the foundation for this segment because I think it's important that you define what love means to you as well. For me, that works. And I love falling in love. I love being in love. I love falling in love. I love the feeling of love. It's all good to me. And I have also thought about what love is to me, what it means to me, and how I receive it and how I give it. Because every way that I enjoy receiving it is also the way I give it. And when I'm giving it the way I enjoy receiving it, it feels like a true loving connection and a true loving relationship. So that's how I've outlined love in my life. I think it's important to identify what love means for you, first and foremost, so that you understand when the criteria is met. And I know it sounds like I'm just breaking it down into logic. And it sort of is, just to understand how it's outlined so you understand what love is in general for you. But the reason I say that it's important to understand it is so that when you have it, you know what it is, and when it's absent, you know that as well, instead of just relying on a feeling. So yes, the feeling of love, the way I look at it, is absolutely real, but feelings are sometimes hard to measure because they get mixed in with other feelings, or, you know, the way you feel is often made up of your emotional and physical state. But when all of that is combined, it's one big, sometimes mixed message. So when you're in a relationship and you have loving feelings towards someone and you forget the logical part of outlining what love is and how you define it, you can sometimes get confused of what love is. I'm not saying that this person who wrote is confused at all. I mean, I'm going to address what they wrote, but I think it's important to outline what love is to you. So I've outlined what it is to me. you may write down what love is to you in a way that says, when somebody hugs me and says everything will be okay, that's a loving gesture and I feel loved. And I'd probably say the same thing. Sure, I can put that on my list of what love means to me. And what's going to happen is as you either write this stuff down or consider what love is to you, you'll end up seeing all these qualities that you like or love about someone else in your life, or someone else that used to be in your life. Like this person who wrote, they had somebody in their life that they once loved, or at least loved those qualities about them. And that gave them that loving feeling, and they had some good times with that person. The challenge is sometimes we remember all the good feelings, but because it was mixed in with the bad feelings, you know, it's a big blended potpourri of emotions that a loving relationship can go through because there are hard times as well. And if this person, the person who wrote, the one they met, became rude and selfish and degrading, now you have all these loving feelings mixed in with some bad feelings as well. And if you've never heard of the term trauma bond, that would be a good one to look up, because this is what happens. You start to mix all the good emotions and all the good feelings that you had in a relationship that went sour with all the bad stuff. And what do you think that you would rather remember? This is what our mind and body sometimes does, is it may go into denial about some of the bad stuff because you don't want to feel that way. If you don't want to feel bad, you'll probably focus more on the good. So this could be like a protection mechanism for your mind and body to not remember how bad some of the things were and remember how you felt when things were good. And when that is your primary focus, it might be difficult to focus on the bad, because if you focus on the bad or think about the bad, you're going to feel bad. And who wants to feel bad? So you might have a relationship that had its ups and downs, but maybe it had more downs than ups. But because you felt good during the good times, you have something to latch onto. And if your mind and body go into denial about the bad times, or at least minimize them, then what'll happen is that you remember more of the good times. And because that is the majority of your thoughts and feelings regarding that past relationship, you're going to have more positive feelings and memories about it. And this is why so many people stay or get back into relationships where they were treated badly, because their filters have kept out a lot of the bad memories and kept in how they felt and how they were treated during the good times. So this is what love can do. Love can trick us into thinking that we had it good when we only had it good sometimes. And this is what happens in the trauma bonding that I mentioned earlier, is that you can be in a relationship that's 90% terrible, but the 10% that's good, the contrast is so great and you feel so good because you've had it so bad for so long that it almost seems like you can't compare it to anything else in your life. You go from low, low, low to high. And you are on cloud 9 because now you're being treated with kindness and respect and love, and you feel it, and it's supportive, and it feels so good, and you just hope it lasts because you already know that most of the time it's terrible. This can happen in relationships where it's bad, 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 and then one day it's good. And during that good time, it's like your dreams came true. And you develop hope that the relationship is going to get better from that point on. You think maybe there's a chance that it'll get better. So not only are you enjoying the moment or the day, but you're also filling yourself with hope and thinking optimistically like there's a chance that it will get better. So all these good feelings combine and really burn themselves into your mind and body as a wonderful resource to connect with when things go bad, you know, in the near future. That 90% where it's bad is when you're grasping at those memories that it was good. So the good memories become very strong inside of you. And the good feelings are all part of those good memories. And Again, who wants to remember the bad stuff? Because when you remember the bad stuff, you get into that state of the feeling that you were in at that time. You'd be like saying, do you remember when so-and-so died? How did that feel? I don't want to feel that. I'm sure you don't want to feel that painful time. This can be what happens to an abuse victim's mind, for example. Someone's been abused over and over again, but on the good days, they were treated so kindly and so nice, and that feeling was amplified because there was no abuse. And because there was no abuse, that's already a good thing. On top of that, if they were kind and caring and respectful and generous, if all of that was part of it too, now you're on cloud nine. Now you're in a blissful state. And this is where all those good memories and good positive feelings start to create a strong resource for later so you can access it. So that could also be the combination of the love that I was talking about, the feelings of love, all of that combined with the good times that create very, very strong associations in your mind, so that as you go forward, when a bad thing happens, you cling on to when it's going to be good again. With this person's email, they wrote that this person that they met became rude and degrading and selfish. And, you know, that probably ended the relationship, because they write, years later, I still tend to miss this person, but I recognize the way they treated me at the end was not loving at all. So there's some logic kicking in, and having those memories is important to remember that if they come back in your life, you're going to get both. You'll probably get the good days and the bad days, but it's important to remember that you're going to get both. So this is one of those things, you know, like childbirth. Childbirth is painful, but some people want children, so they have a child and it's painful. Like some women say it's the most painful thing they've ever experienced, but then they have another child later. So they take that pain along with the pleasure they get from having a child. A little bit different because it's only momentary pain, even though it could last a while, but having the child is the reward for them. But in a relationship, it's a constant up and down, back and forth cycle. I mean, if the relationship is not the healthiest or toxic. So coming back to this person's email, they write, I want to recognize that love was once there and cherish it in my heart, but I would also like to acknowledge that it is not someone who would have made a good romantic partner. So they're right on. I mean, exactly a great way to think. Yes, there was love there at one time, and you can cherish that love. I look at it as cherishing how that person made me feel. Because when you have the feeling inside of you, I believe you're connecting with love. It could be self-love. It could be love for someone else. But I think it's sort of all mixed in there. It's all the same. Because when you have someone that makes you love yourself, or at least in those times they did, you feel loving. And you feel good. A lot of good feelings in love. But you're right. If they're belittling you and degrading you, then they're not a good romantic partner. They served a purpose at one time and they made you feel good at times. But this is the type of person that maybe it's better to love from afar. Now they go on, is it foolish of me to want both, or is it even possible to feel and think both? Absolutely. You can feel and think both. You can feel love and know they're not good for you. You can remember the good times and hate the bad times. This happens often in abusive relationships. You know, my stepfather, I had so many loving feelings for my stepfather, even though he was a violent alcoholic that hit my mom and mistreated my siblings. So I have this weird feeling inside of me that this is the guy I grew up with that I sometimes call dad. And he's also someone I want nothing to do with. But when I think about him, like let's just say I got the call that he died, I have a feeling it's going to hit me pretty hard, because he meant something to me at one time. And nobody can erase those times. I have good memories of hanging out with him. And I remember one time we were on a roller coaster. I convinced him to go on. Well, actually, it might have been like a swinging pirate ship. The swinging pirate ship that goes back and forth, and then it goes all the way upside down. And he looked right at me while we were upside down, and he said something like, I can't believe you talked me into this, or something like that. It was just hilarious. I've never seen him that way. And it's a good feeling inside of me. It's a good memory. And On that day, I loved him. On that day, in that moment, I cared about him. And when I think about him now, I have mixed feelings. I absolutely do not want him in my life or near my family. He is a dangerous person. And when he's not dangerous, he's like Jekyll and Hyde. He's a kind person. He's a generous person. But he's just not safe to be around. So I think I've answered your question. Yes, you can do both. You can remember the times you felt with these people and the times you felt for these people in your life. You can remember the good times that you had and those memories and those moments. And you can also tell yourself, that was a wonderful time. That one day, that one week, several times during our existence together, we had amazing times and I felt really good about my connection with that person. And the rest of the time, they're just so toxic, I can't be around them. This is why I love from afar. It's not only physical distance, it's an emotional distance. I have to keep myself safe for my emotional well-being, which means I have to be distant from him. I don't totally invest in loving him and wanting to be with him and creating new memories with him. I don't support that, but I do remember what we had. And when I think of the good times, it makes me feel good. So you don't need my permission to do this. You can absolutely love people and love those times. And when you do, you feel good about it because you felt good about it then, and it's still the same. I mean, this is what can happen in a typical abusive relationship, is that we have these mixed feelings inside of us. Like, I still love this person, yet they hurt me. But why do I still love them? Because you did. You had moments where you loved them, and then you have moments that you couldn't stand them, or you feared them. You had moments that you hated them, maybe. And these are all real. They're all authentically you. They are all part of you. They are just part of the human experience. But just because you love someone doesn't mean you have to be with them, doesn't mean you have to be near them, doesn't mean you have to spend your life with them. It just means that you have loved them at moments and probably couldn't open your heart to them at other moments, and definitely had to protect your heart at other moments as well. So I think I've answered that one question, is both possible. And let me just answer your last question. How should I train my mind to handle this situation? Well, I think what I just said is probably something that will ease your mind, but I don't think the mind requires retraining. I think you just require discipline, because it is very hard to have love for someone and then just turn it off like a light switch. I mean, some people can do this. I can think of caring, loving thoughts that I have about everyone that used to be in my life, at least the ones that I loved. But if somebody said, hey, you know, you shouldn't have those loving thoughts about that person because, oh, she did this to you and you should feel angry about that, I could say, well, yeah, I guess you're right. I should feel angry about that. But we did have so many good times. Do I just throw all that away? I don't think you need to do that. In fact, it might be unhealthy if you did that. It might be unhealthy to not acknowledge all the loving, fun, happy times that you had with somebody. Like, I've heard from people that said, you know, I've been married for 20 years, and for the last 2 years, I found out that they were cheating on me. My whole marriage is a sham. I can't believe they cheated on me. I feel like I just wasted 20 years of my life. You know what? I'm not saying you shouldn't feel that way. I would be very angry. I would be thinking, what? I just spent all this time with you and I found out that you're cheating on me. I could have spent time with somebody else who would never cheat on me. So it would feel like a waste of time. What am I doing with you if you're going to just cheat on me? But there's also the fact that you did have 18 years and there's probably some amazing memories in there. I don't think it's necessarily healthy to tell you to forget about all those amazing memories and to forget about how you felt, because what ends up happening is your identity is wrapped up in those memories. They're an intrinsic part of you. So if I tell you, remember your wedding day and how wonderful it was, and you say, yeah, but they started cheating on me 5 years later, so the memory of the wedding doesn't matter anymore. I'm not going to talk you out of it if that's how you feel, but if you had good memories before you found out that they betrayed you, then why would you take that away from yourself? It's not really about them. It's how you felt about yourself. It's how you felt inside. And yes, it's how you felt about them. It's the security that you felt and the warmth and, of course, the love. It's all intertwined. And it does feel like they took some of that away. But don't take that away from yourself. So if you have good memories in a relationship that became sour, that became toxic, it doesn't mean the good memories weren't real, and you definitely don't want to invalidate those feelings and those memories inside of you so that you actually lose a part of yourself, because that can happen. If you take a 20-year relationship and you tell yourself that 20 years was a waste of time and you forget all the good memories and you're only focused on the bad ones, then it feels like you're ripping a lot of who you were out of yourself. And if you do that, this is, like I said, a part of your identity. If you do that, you're going to have a lot missing inside of you. Some people can do this and they need to start over. They need to start fresh. They need to rebuild that stuff inside of them. And a lot of it might contain their self-worth, their trust issues. If they rip that out too, that typically has to be rebuilt, which is why you got to be careful what you rip out. You might have some really good memories with good people and some really bad memories with those same people, but I don't think it's necessarily always a good idea to rip out everything when you find out they're a jerk or they're abusive, unless it serves you. Like if you rip out these memories and rip out these feelings and don't want to have any good feelings about them and it makes you feel better, go for it. Go for it. I'm serious. You are allowed to do that. If somebody mistreated you or abused you horribly and you used to have loving feelings toward them, and extracting or ripping out all those memories and feelings that you used to have, all good and bad, makes you feel better and allows you to make a fresh start without perhaps a toxic mixture of everything that it was, it might give you the fresh start that you need. So that's where I am with all this. Hope it makes sense. And I'm so glad you tuned in. Thanks so much for writing to the person who wrote. And I hope this helps answer your questions. Great question. Thank you again. And I'll be right back with my thank yous and my goodbyes and my final words right after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank everyone that supports this show. I normally name the patrons of the week, the financial backers of the show, but this is a vacation episode, so I don't really have access to names right now because I am on vacation visiting family. So I hope that you know that I appreciate everyone that supports this show. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. And if you find value in this show and you'd like to give, head over to moretob.com and you can choose to give a single donation or become a monthly patron. And if you do become a patron, I give back. I have private episodes, worksheets, and a video archive over at moretob.com. Thank you again, patrons. I also talked about love and abuse earlier. I won't get into that in too much detail, but if you're having a difficult relationship, or you want to find out if there's perhaps not so much true love in your relationship, head over to loveandabuse.com. And also, I have a program called Healed Being over at healedbeing.com. And it is for the person who realizes or has discovered that they are emotionally abusive or hurtful to the people they love. And I think it's important, if you've discovered that and you don't like that about yourself, or you think you'd like to change that about yourself, this program helps you do it. Head over to healedbeing.com for that. And finally, thanks to Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And for my final words, the last segment reminded me of something my girlfriend told me. She said, "I care about everyone that I've ever dated," you know, that she ever had a serious relationship with. She goes, "I still love them. I still have feelings for them. I still think about them. I still hope they're okay." Doesn't mean she's in love and I'm worried that she's going to go back to them. It just shows that she has a big heart and she is a caring person. And she does care about the people that she spent time with and shared experiences with. And, you know, for the longest time, I would just shut people out. I would just shut the door and say, well, that relationship's over. I got to move on. But when my girlfriend said that, I thought, okay, well, let me go into the past and see if I do have any feelings for these people. And I thought, you know, I would be very sad if I heard any one of them got hurt or died. I would feel very sad. And I thought, well, you know, that makes sense because I spent time with them and it would make me sad. But I thought, is it because I know them or because I was so familiar with them? Or is it because I actually do still have feelings for them and I care about them? And I think it's a combination of everything. I do think that when we spend time with people and develop a connection with people, that we have feelings that last maybe indefinitely. Like, they are a part of us because we identified ourselves with them. We became a part of them, just like they became a part of us. And I don't know how many years ago I talked about when you get into a relationship, I becomes we and me becomes us. And the more you do that, the more you are identifying as two people. So the other person is a part of you. Every thought that you have, or almost every thought you have, includes them as well. Hey, I'm going to go to the store. I wonder if, you know, Asha wants anything. I wonder if she wants a yogurt. I'm going to get her a yogurt. I think she would like that. So every thought in my head has a part of her. So she's in my makeup. She's in my every thought. She's in my experiences in life. And if she were to suddenly just take off on me and go see someone else or marry someone, I'd be devastated. But how could I possibly rewire all the good times and the good stuff that has happened to us over the years? It would be very difficult. There might be anger inside of me. I might have to go through some sort of process. Like, it's been many decades since my first real long-term relationship, but any of the negativity that I felt because of that relationship has dwindled, and I do remember some good times, but I would never date these people again. I can't ever see that happening, but they still hold a place in my heart because they were once a part of it. So that's how I look at this stuff. I think this question made me think about it a little bit more and ponder and reflect about, you know, what is healthy thinking? Is it healthy to have feelings for people in your past? I'm going to say absolutely yes. Even the people that have wronged you in some way, it's absolutely healthy to have feelings for them because they were a part of you and you were a part of them. And it's very difficult to remove that part unless you've been through so much trauma that it's healthier to remove that part. But I believe that once there is that loving connection where you can be vulnerable with another person that is vulnerable, you share an attachment that you don't share with anyone else unless you create that attachment with somebody else. But in your life, typically your friends and your family, you don't get as deep and you don't get as vulnerable with somebody as you do with, in this case, a romantic partner. So again, this was interesting to think about again. I want to thank that person for writing and asking that question because it is a great question. And I know a lot of couples deal with this. A lot of couples, or at least one person in a couple, will think, you still have a picture of that guy or that girl or whoever? You still have a picture of them? Why do you still have a picture of them? Well, you know, they were a part of my life. Yeah, but you shouldn't have any pictures of anyone but me. And I think that might be a closed-minded view, even though I might have said that 15 years ago. I might have said something like that. I don't think I've actually ever said, maybe I did. But I'm going to say that now that I'm older and wiser and I understand love, at least I believe I understand love a bit more and what a healthy relationship is supposed to be, if you are supporting someone else's good feelings and happiness and their individuality, which is my definition of love, if you are supporting their happiness and they have memories that make them happy and they have pictures of people in their life that they were in relationships with and maybe they're not in contact with them anymore, it's just a memory in their life. It's just their history. if you are okay with them having those things in their life and having those memories and feeling good about those memories, then what you're doing is showing them how much you love them. And when they feel that support from you, they're going to want more of that, more of you, and they're never going to want to let you go. At least that's how I see things. So thank you again for joining me today. Just remember to always keep an open mind. This is what helps you step into your power and create the life you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you, you are amazing.